Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back, everybody. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined by Fred Jackson. Chris Woodward has gone back to his office to continue to scout for news, and so Steve Jordahl.
I think he's playing solitaire.
He's playing solitaire. Does anybody play solitaire anymore on their computer? I mean,
my wife does, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many games that have come out
he
since
works
the
very
solitaire
hard.
Days.
He works very hard.
Yeah. No, he does. All our staff at American Family News do a great job, including you, Steve.
Well, thank you.
So, so Steve Paisley Jordahl is actually decked out in Paisley.
I do have it on today. You got to rep every so often, right?
Yeah, you got to do it. All right, what's I don't know why I keep using what's cooking today. Maybe I'm just hungry.
Maybe that's it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I've been keeping an eye on the Kash Patel hearings. You know, he's in line to become the director of the FBI, and there was expected to be some fireworks in his confirmation. And indeed, there were. The tact that the Democrats are taking is that he's a conspiracy theorist, that, you know, he doesn't have the right experience, that he's been on podcasts and said things that are crazy and everything. And so he, at one point, just got a little bit tired of it all. And this is what he said, cut 15.
If the best attacks on me are going to be false accusations and grotesque mischaracterizations, the only thing this body is doing is defeating the credibility of the men and women at the FBI. I stood with them here in this country. In every theater of war we have, I was on the ground in service of this nation. And any accusations leveled against me that I would somehow put political bias before the Constitution are grotesquely unfair. And I will have you reminded that I have been endorsed by over 300,000 law enforcement officers to become the next director of the FBI. Let's ask them.
All right, then.
Oh. Feisty.
Yeah.
Yes.
Feisty. Now, who knows how to calculate the amount of experience that someone has and how that translates into a prestigious and important position like Kash Patel has been nominated for. But he was senior director of the counterterrorism directorate at the U.S. National Security Council, former federal prosecutor at the U.S. Department of Justice. It seems to me, Fred, that a lot of this is political theater. At the same time, Democrats are pretty stubborn about trying to mischaracterize people that President Trump has put forward because they can't stand President Trump.
Yeah, that's it. And we're getting, you know, the tactics at these hearings are fairly common. They will dig up partial quotes.
Right.
They did that with Kash Patel this morning.
And they did that with RFK Jr. yesterday.
And they don't allow, in this case, Kash Patel to say, wait a minute, you're taking me out of context. They'll say, it's my time.
Yes.
It's my time. I don't have time to hear your response.
Technically, these senators don't have to ask questions.
No.
They can use their whole time mischaracterizing someone.
Yes.
So it makes a great sound clip. But I've seen that. We've all seen that if you watched hearings over the years.
Mm-hmm.
That's common.
Yeah. Trump's Supreme Court nominees that were showing up, you know, a Democrat would say, quote, something partial that they said somewhere along the way. And, of course, was it with Kavanaugh? All the, here's something from your yearbook.
Yes.
Remember of that we went through?
That's right.
So it's Democrats, we got some dirt on you. Here it is. But, no, I don't want to hear from you.
I think it was Amy Klobuchar this morning who said to him, I don't have time for your answers. I've got only a limited amount of time. To which he looks up at her and says, well, have at it. And then he sits back.
And I'm sure that the Trump administration, the people who are prepping the nominees, have drilled it into them. You've got to try to remain calm. And I consider Kash Patel's rebuttal there to be calm.
Yes. Yeah. No,
but they're told, listen, they are going to try to push you into some sort of outburst that makes you look like a wild-eyed crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that will be what's played by the mainstream media.
I thought Pam Bondi did a great job during her hearings.
She was unbreakable.
Yes, she was very strong.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So anything else going on with Cash Patel? That is going on just today. Is that the expectation?
I don't know if he's coming. I know that JFK's back for a second day. And RFK. I'm sorry. Yeah. I keep doing that. JFK's in front of a different panel. RFK is in front of a second panel. It's a different committee today, I think.
That oversees Health and Human Services.
Yes. So I don't know what the schedule is for Cash. I should have looked, but I didn't.
All right. And then also Tulsi Gabbard is scheduled today, or is that tomorrow?
She's in a different committee.
All right. So it's three hearings going on simultaneously?
Two for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And these things, in terms of voting, these, first of all, have to be voted out of committee. So you have to have – there are a majority of members from the president's political party, right? So there's always – so there'll be a majority of Republicans on these committees. Mm-hmm. But they're not always Republicans who are supportive. Sometimes you can – it depends on who's got the position.
The Pete Hegseth.
Yes.
Was the case.
Yeah.
And when it went to the full Senate vote, there were three Republicans who voted against Hegseth.
Including Mitch McConnell.
McConnell, Susan Collins, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Yeah. And that's why Vice President J.D. Vance had to come in and do the deciding vote.
Break the 50-50 tie.
Yeah.
So these will have to get voted out of committee is what I'm saying.
Yep.
And if they are voted out, and by voted out, I mean
approved.
Approved. And these are always narrow, majorities.
They're generally going along party lines.
Yeah. And then it will go to the full Senate. And correct. Then, like Fred said, anything can happen.
Yeah. They have... To this point, they have lined up their ducks in a row to the point where I'm pretty sure they know what's going to happen when these people get to the floor.
Yeah.
They've whipped the votes, so they know. So it's not as much of a unknown or a risk as you might think.
And there's no bombshells, right, Steve? I mean, these things, for the most part, these individuals have been vetted. Both sides of the political aisle know the quotes that are going to be mentioned. Like I was talking about RFK Jr.'s, his hearing yesterday, partial quotes being thrown at him. And then, the Democrats saying, I know that you're in favor of this and you're in favor of that and you're despicable and all those kinds of things. So there's no real surprises that usually come out of these hearings.
They say the internet is forever, but there's only so much that a guy can post on the internet. So it's not hard to find his social media accounts and go back 5-6 years or more, and just take a look at them all. They've got a lot of people to do this, to watch every appearance he's had on a talk show or a podcast. It's work, but it's not certainly an insurmountable work, and right. Everybody can do it. So there is nothing that they can bring out, I don't think.
All right.
And that's why – I'm sorry, I didn't mean to stop the flow there, but that's why they had to bring on, like in the Kavanaugh hearing, something completely made up at the end – that didn't exist because everybody had Brett Kavanaugh's social media life, his life to public life.
His rulings, his writings.
Everything. He was pretty public, so they had to find something that nobody knew about, well, because it didn't happen. So that's the only way.
That was initiated by someone's letter.
A letter.
A woman's letter that was written.
Yeah, to Feinstein, I think. Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah, I think that's right. Anyway, all right. What else?
We're still hearing a little bit about this tragedy on the Potomac. I'm hearing now that, first of all, it's a Black Hawk helicopter.
Okay.
And they are meant to be stealthy. I mean, they're built so that they're hard to see, especially at night. And the helicopter might have been flying dark or without lights on, as in undercover.
Which would explain why they had the night goggles. Fred mentioned that.
Too close to the ground, like just exactly what Fred said. But tragedy. We're hearing from there was a guy that couldn't get on the plane because his dog.
Yeah, that was in Wichita.
Yeah.
Yeah. His dog was too big and so he drove instead, but he would have been on that flight.
Yeah.
And we talked about the fact that these kinds of tragedies, there are always stories like that.
Do you remember there was a plane that crashed into the Potomac? Back in the 80s or so, when there was a guy that went in the river,
Value
Lenny.
Jet. Was it Value Jet?
I don't remember what jet it was. I just remember, I think the name Lenny was the guy that waded into the water and started pulling survivors out. This is ice water. This is in the middle of winter.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think he was up on the bridge.
Yeah.
And he dove in.
Oh, my goodness.
To start saving people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Back in the 80s. I remember the movie with Tom Hanks called Sully, but that was about the pilot.
That was in Manhattan.
Yeah, and that goes to your point you made earlier in the program, Fred, that at low altitude, you don't have much time to figure out what you're going to do.
No, and the movie portrayed that very well. You know, he took off from LaGuardia.
Yeah.
And he was heading south and hit the birds.
Yeah, bird strike.
And they kept saying, well, you know, there's an airport over here in Jersey. That's
yeah.
He said, no, I can't.
Right.
We're going in. Yeah. To the river.
Split second.
And he did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Just incredible. The both of them, pilot and the co-pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't let inexperienced people fly these planes. They're expensive planes, and there are a lot of lives involved. So, that's surgeons, you never get the first time.
That's the first time I've ever been in a plane like this, but I'm going to fly it.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. You see these movies. I don't fly. I don't fly planes. I'm not a pilot is what I mean. I do fly on planes, but that's why I always think, Fred, when you see some movie where they pull someone out of economy and say, okay, we're going to talk you through it, that's not reality. That's just Hollywood, right?
No, and for the most part, especially the passenger planes. But there have been incidents, even in recent years, where some guy's a passenger. I'm talking about twin-engine plane, small twin-engine plane. And the pilot has passed out. This guy gets on the radio to air traffic. My pilot has passed out. I don't have any experience. I need help.
Yeah.
Now, with a smaller plane, so it's happened.
Okay, smaller planes only?
Smaller planes. Oh, no, not the big stuff.
Yeah.
The big stuff gets complicated.
Yeah.
but the smaller planes, it's pretty well aim for the runway.
Yeah.
Pull the throttle back and slow right over the runway. You'll be okay.
Wow. And I wouldn't want it either
way. I would imagine, Fred, before they put a pilot in something like an airline, a passenger liner, that he's got thousands of hours on a simulator. Then he's got time shadowing from the third seat in the cockpit.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's a co-pilot maybe for
years.
Years.
Co-pilot.
Well, I follow the Tim Wildman principle on getting on small planes.
No.
It's got to have at least two engines and two pilots.
That's right.
Because Tim doesn't want to be the one who has to try to land the plane if something happens to a single pilot.
J.J. Jasper, I think, has invited Tim up a couple of times. Ain't no way.
He says no. I say the same thing now. It was probably 6 or 7 years ago Tim said that, and I thought, that is a really good way to live your life. two engines and two pilots.
That's right.
So, by the way, folks, we got a little sidetracked.
What are the odds?
We're certainly not laughing about the tragedy that's happened in D.C., just general flight fears. Yeah. Let's put it that way. All right, go ahead.
Well, they are deporting people now, and they've got, apparently there's millions that they want to deport. And in some cases, the countries are taking them back. In some cases, these are hardened criminals that if you deport them and send them back to their country of origin, the family of the person that this man or woman might have murdered, they don't want him just taken back to Colombia and set free. I just chose that country at random, but they want him to pay. So where are they going to put them all? Well, Donald Trump has an answer. Donald Trump is going to send them to Hotel Gitmo.
You mean these ones that are sure enough criminals?
Or just any. They can hold up to 30,000 illegal immigrants
at Guantanamo Bay. Cuba.
Yeah, so they
is this temporary or permanent? This is just while you're awaiting an opening in Colombia or Venezuela.
That I haven't been able to figure that part out yet. Yeah. But yeah, he's going to open up the.
I had no idea that they had that kind of capacity.
I know.
At Gitmo.
Huge.
Wow. listen, I know Tim's of the mindset that if they committed crimes in this country, they should be in a prison here.
Yeah. Well, and this is probably as good. This is where they held the terrorists from 9/11.
I'm of the mindset that just get rid of them. Send them back. If we lock down our border, they're not coming back. But let the countries of origin deal with them. I don't want taxpayers' money going. But anyway, it's people's opinions are all over the map on that.
Well, whenever I hear Gitmo, I hear, you can't handle the truth.
Well, it's a few good men.
That is the one, probably the best scene ever put on film, I think.
Well, at least in terms of a courtroom scene. That is a brilliant scene. We're talking about the folks, the Tom Cruise movie, A Few Good Men, along with
Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. You can't. I'll spare our listeners.
Started out pretty good though.
Oh, it's not bad. Hey, before we go, I know you got a list of stories. I want to get to President Trump talking about getting back to work.
Yeah,
if you're in the federal workforce, because then Fred has a story that I want to get to.
So yeah, one of the executive orders, one of the things that the president said, I think we might have mentioned this yesterday, is that workers have about 15 or 16 days to decide if they're going to stay with the federal government and come back and occupy a seat, a chair in the federal building, or whether they want to retire. Offering them a very generous severance package of like 8 months of full benefits and, go at it. And so this is what President Trump had to say, cut 14.
If they don't agree by February 6th to show up back to work in their office, they will be terminated, and we will therefore be downscaling our government, which is something that the last 10 presidents have tried very hard to do but failed. Most of the people we're talking about have not been going to their federal offices in many, many years, from even before COVID. But they have nevertheless been paid. Some have worked, some haven't worked, and most of the studies say that some have just gone through the motions. We may ask these people to prove that they didn't have another job during their so-called employment with the United States of America, because if they did, that would be unlawful, as you understand.
Okay. Now, Fred, tell the story. This is from Dana Perino, I think.
The show called The Five on Fox.
Right.
And she's one of the co-hosts on there, Dana Perino. And they were talking about this yesterday. And she told the story, I think it goes this way, that she has a friend who's a supervisor of a federal agency. So this friend has been going into the office, but she can tell when people log into the computers from home.
Right.
So one day there was this incident where this person had logged in from home. So to signal that, hey, I'm here, I'm working.
Yes.
So this friend of Dana Perino, supervisor, goes to lunch, and she happens to go to a Macy's department store.
Right.
And the worker, who is allegedly working from home, is working at the cosmetics department at Macy's.
She's double dipping,
which goes to what Donald Trump was just saying there. Apparently that is a federal crime. You're collecting a paycheck from the federal government, but you're working somewhere else.
Supposed to be working from home.
So one has to wonder how many of the Dana Perino stories are out there. Because you have people who have been working from their homes. Now, these are people who live within a certain circumference.
Right.
Of downtown D.C. since COVID. So we're talking years.
Yeah.
This has been going on. So what Donald Trump is doing, you got until next Thursday.
Yeah.
You come into work, because we reported yesterday, right now only 6% of the federal workforce is coming to work in the offices.
That's just crazy to me. And one of the things, Steve, that Donald Trump said when he was doing this with the press making this announcement, is he said the American people are out there working. They have to go to their jobs.
Yes.
And then they pay their taxes, and we pay federal workers who stay home.
You got to think that they're kind of skating on thin ice anyway, because they're going to be taxed on their government salary, and then they're going to be taxed on the Macy's fragrance counter in this case. Someone, not that hard to figure out, they're getting two incomes,
right?
Full-time jobs. So there's a way to, maybe they just think, and maybe it would have just flown under the radar there, but
right.
Yeah.
Well, Dana Perino's friend's employee not flying under the radar. So
no.
All right, I wanted to get that in because this story is just mind-boggling. to me.
Yeah.
I know that Elon Musk, he was one of the ones who said for his employees, no, you got to come back to work.
Yeah.
In the office.
That's right.
So
you got to be here. And so we're going to find out. This is not too far off. It's next Thursday.
February 6th, right?
They've got to respond.
Right.
To the offer. 8 months.
It's an excellent offer. If they're, you know, if they've got other jobs, they could basically take their severance for 8 months.
Yeah.
And as a kickoff to a new career. So hopefully that will result in emptying out some of these federal office buildings. So
yeah, we told
or filling them up.
Yeah.
Or filling them up.
We told you yesterday that the Catholic Charities was put out a film telling immigrants, illegals, how to avoid ICE and how to make the ICE's life and mission difficult.
Right.
Well, I think I'm almost positive that Secretary Kristi Noem was listening because she had this announcement last night, cut 13.
Today we are announcing that we have stopped all grant funding that's being abused by NGOs to facilitate illegal immigration into this country. So it's amazing to me the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent by the federal government that has been sent to NGOs to facilitate this invasion of our country. So I've taken action to stop that those funds, to reevaluate them, and to make sure that we're actually using the taxpayer dollars in a way that strengthens this country, that keeps us safe.
Secretary Noem, if you're listening again today, thank you.
Yes. So, Kristi Noem recently confirmed as Secretary of Homeland Security. Now, NGOs means non-governmental organizations, correct?
Yes.
All right. So most people think of those as being at the United Nations, but Catholic Charities would also be one. So this is a problem, Fred, of, I know we're coming up towards the end of the program here, but of federal money going to organizations that technically are not under the auspices of federal government oversight. There has to be a way to make sure the monies are spent for the correct purposes. And in this case, it goes against the wishes of the administration when it comes.
Yeah, some of these NGOs get, and I'm not sure the exact figure, but I think it's around $10,000, $15,000 per head.
Yeah.
So that's what they're being paid.
It was nearly $3 billion that Catholic Charities nationally got in the last 4 years.
Yeah, it was a moneymaker for these organizations.
And they get more money the more illegals they help.
Oh, absolutely.
So they are incentivized
to
increase the traffic.
They have a conflict of interest, Ed.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, what you got? Anything we can finish the show?
We do need to check in with our favorite fake news site, the Babylon Bee, who is reporting that senators they're paused the next round of RFK hearing questions to announce that this next round of questions is brought to you by Pfizer.
this is a bizarre. This is I know that's funny. The Babylon Bee, and by the way, same outfit produces Not the Bee, which are serious stories that sound so outlandish.
They should be in the
Bee. They should be in the Bee.
Right.
But this is a bizarre setup. There is so much money that goes from pharmaceuticals to members of both political parties, okay, and money that goes from these pharmaceutical companies to help fund like the CDC and some of these other organizations that are in charge of oversight. I got to tell you, I would be very interested. I don't agree with everything that RFK Jr. says and believes, but I'd be very interested to see what he digs up in this kind of weird relationship with these pharmaceuticals. So, all right, folks, that is all the time we have for today's edition of Today's Issues. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow on Trivia Friday, but more great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. Bye for now.